her talk is called Sticks and Stones, the Association Between Weight Discrimination and Mental and Physical Well-Being.
Hello. I'd like to add my voice to the thank you for being here at the very last presentation of the conference in this remote corner of the convention centre. We really appreciate it, so we know you all really want to be here. I have no financial relationships to disclose. Some of this has already been touched on, but I'll cover a few of these instances for those of you that aren't as familiar with the extent of the prevalence of weight stigma, and this is a massively, rapidly growing body of research, which makes it really fun to try and keep up with. Healthcare, we've touched on, education, some of the things that you may or may not know, fat students fare worse in middle school, high school, despite having equivalent intelligence test scores. They're less likely to get into university, they're less likely to get into grad school, despite having equally good undergraduate results and recommendation letters. Employment, they're less likely to be hired, more likely to be fired, more likely to be disciplined, they earn less. Customer service, there's studies showing this, but just some anecdotal data. Recently, a 14-year-old girl, this did the rounds on the internet, so it came to mind, was asked to leave a shop because they didn't want her kind sort of sullying their image because she was too fat. Bullying is becoming, because of size, is becoming one of the most common forms of bullying in schools. There have been a couple of laboratory-based studies, so these aren't based on actual judicial cases, that work hasn't been done, but there have been a couple that have shown that juries reading vignettes or hearing about defendants who differ only by the image of their weight are much more likely to convict a fat woman, the same didn't apply for men, than a thin woman. Again, a vignette study, people are less likely to stop and assist a fat woman who has been in a motor vehicle accident to which they were the only witness. The media, we've all seen it. Can I just ask, has anybody been to any sessions about obesity since they've been here? Not that many of you. I haven't been to any, I'm pleased to say. But researchers are just as bad as the media. This is what Dr. Charlotte Cooper called the headless fatty. If you have been in obesity sessions, you will have probably seen a lot of them. You may not have actually really registered it. It has become so common in our culture that people don't notice it. My very first session was actually on public health law, and the speaker was talking about the New York attempts to reduce serving sizes of sugary drinks. And she had a picture, a headless fatty picture, holding a cup. And afterwards, I went up to her and I mentioned this. And she didn't even recall that it was in there. She just looked for a picture, you know, representing large portion sizes and hadn't actually noticed that it was a dehumanizing cut-off image of a fat person. And, of course, being fat in public is always a joy. People stare at you. In supermarkets, I've heard of people taking things out of the shopping trolley of fat customers because, you know, they shouldn't be eating that. Having things thrown at you, you mentioned during exercise, having eggs thrown out of cars at you, being shouted at. So there's this sort of idea that all these fat people should be exercising, but, you know, just don't do it where we can see you. So why is this important, apart from the fact that it's not nice? Living in this kind of very hostile environment is a form of chronic stress. And the body responds to that in very well-documented ways. The whole stress response, the cortisol and the other glucocorticoid hormones are increased. And we know that this increase is associated with systemic inflammation, hypertension, heart disease, diabetes. This is very well documented, particularly in the racism literature, there's just some effect sizes there. Experience of perceived discrimination based on race was associated between 2 and 6 times the risk of a range of diseases that are usually, so in the case of fat people, we're starting to show the same kinds of effects. A study from the Rudd Center recently showed viewing fat-shaming television clips increase cortisol levels in both fat and thin women, actually. So it's not particularly good for anybody. And this has been shown also in the homophobia literature, the mental health stigma literature. It's not good for your body. Now, in the weight stigma literature, as I said, this is a very fast-growing area. Excuse me, can I get some water? Thank you. Weight stigma has been linked to just about everything. Reduced health-related quality of life, impaired mood, more depression, more anxiety disorders, more suicidal ideation, self-esteem, you can read it, physical health, more illnesses, more hypertension, more heart disease, all the things that are usually associated with obesity itself have been linked to exposure to stigma. There are also effects on people's behaviour. Being exposed to stigma increases the risk of binge eating, reduces the likelihood that people are going to engage in exercise, lots of avoidant coping strategies. It's generally just not very healthy. One of the things that is brought up from time to time is how much fat people are costing the health service. What we do find is that fat people who have been shamed in the past are less likely to engage with frontline healthcare. They're less likely to do things like go for breast screening or other preventive health services. They're more likely to turn up in the emergency department with some kind of advanced condition because it's been left as long as possible, because the thought of going to see their healthcare provider is so unpleasant that things tend to develop much further. So my particular area of interest is internalised weight stigma. So we have all these messages going on around us, but a lot of people actually internalise that message, so they devalue themselves because of their weight. I'm fat, I'm disgusting, I'm ugly, I'm worthless, nobody could possibly love me, I'm a terrible human being. And internalised weight stigma, internalised weight stigma has also been linked with some of the same outcomes, health-related quality of life, again, avoidant coping, reduced exercise, more binge eating, that kind of thing. So what I was looking at was the impact and the intersection, the interaction of experienced and internalised weight stigma on eating behaviour and a few other psychological outcomes. You set me up beautifully for this, but I'll get to that in a second. And like Andrea, I was trying to get a range of internalisation attitudes. So I recruited online through diet and weight loss sites, plus size fashion sites, but also size acceptance sites, Hays sites. I wanted people with differing levels of internalised weight stigma so I'd be able to measure that. I cut off my upper age limit at 69 because quite a lot of the evidence is showing that once you get to the older ages, weight stigma becomes less of an issue for people, possibly because either they don't care or because other kinds of stigma such as ageism are becoming more important to them. And this is what we asked them about. I'll just move on to what we looked at. Also, when we got our presentation briefs, we were given this ADA template, American Disability Association template, that was supposed to make everything really clear. And one of the things they said was, don't use many graphs and use really contrasting colours. And I've seen other presenters haven't done that so much, so I apologise for the cyan, magenta and what have you that I'm about to assault you with. So I had 379 participants, as is often the case. They were mostly female, mostly white. The average BMI was just under 37, but there was a huge range. The minimum cutoff was 25, but it went all the way up to 76. Mean age, middle age, highly educated sample. Just under 70% of them had at least an undergraduate degree, a college degree, and 37% actually had a higher degree. Most were in employment or education. And they came from all over the world, but the majority from North America and the UK. Now, the measure that I used to ask about their experience of stigma is called the Stigmatizing Situations Inventory, shortened to SSI from here on in. And it measures, it measures stigma across 11 different domains. So from the bottom up, comments from children, look at that lady, she's really fat. Negative assumptions, you know, people just thinking that you're stupid. Physical barriers, so things like seats in restaurants or on buses, that kind of thing. Being stared at encompasses a wide range of things. It includes being pointed at, having people take your picture, you know, like you're an exhibit in the street. Oh, look at the fat woman. All these kinds of things. Nasty comments from family and from other people, colleagues, friends, total strangers. So that includes sort of drive-by shoutings, as one of my friends likes to call it. Being avoided, being excluded. These aren't individual questions. There's about 50-odd questions on this thing, but these are the domains. Okay, so there's a couple of things that I'd like to draw your attention to. Orange is never. The beautifully matched turquoise is once, and those pink lines are more than once. So as you can see, comments are the most commonly experienced form of stigma. Almost everyone has had that at least once. Comments from family, comments from other people. Inappropriate comments from doctors. Now, this isn't just about saying, you know, we have to do something about your weight. This is inappropriate comments. So, for example, things where, doctor, I've been impaled. Yeah, I love that. Or maybe you should lose some weight and you'd feel better. Things like, there's some examples where women have gone to the doctor due to loss of libido or, you know, poor relationships and been told, well, if you lose some weight, maybe your husband would find you attractive, that kind of thing. About a third of our respondents had experienced job discrimination of some form, which fits in quite well with the rest of the literature, which again, sort of, you're talking about these basic structural inequalities, and you get this vicious circle of lowered socioeconomic status that makes it harder and harder to get out of. 1/10 of my sample had been physically attacked because of their weight, 6% of them more than once. And again, this is consistent with a couple of other studies that have looked at this with very large sample sizes, 1 in 10 people. And as is often the case, women experience more stigma than men. And women tend to experience it at lower weights than men. They don't need to be visibly huge before people start saying things to them, whereas with men, they tend to be a bit bigger before they start to experience this kind of stigma. Okay, there weren't huge differences between the regions. Compared with North America, there was a little bit less experienced stigma in the UK and Oceania, a little more in Europe, but the differences weren't huge. I compared America to the UK simply because those were the two with the biggest sample sizes. Some of the others were quite small. And while the North Americans experienced more stigma, the attitudes were actually worse in the UK, which is quite interesting. There was there were higher anti-fat attitudes in general, so what you think of other people, and higher internalised weight stigma, as in what you think of yourself. And bear in mind, these are all overweight or fat participants, so these are feelings about themselves. Okay, so just some things I'd like to draw your attention to here. So IWS is internalised weight stigma. SSI is that big questionnaire about experience stigma. It doesn't fit on slides, so it's just SSI. So the first thing to notice is that, as expected and as we've previously found, there was a very strong relationship with gender and experience stigma. But something that, as far as I know, hasn't really been brought up in other studies, there wasn't a lot of relationship between gender and internalised weight stigma. So both men and women are internalising these messages, even if women are the ones getting the brunt of the stigmatising experience. As expected, experience stigma increased massively as BMI went up. But interestingly, there was no statistically significant relationship with internalised stigma. There's people of all sizes that go around thinking this way about themselves. There was also not an enormous correlation between experience and internalised stigma. And I think if you think about this, you know, while it is quite common, it's not ubiquitous to have things thrown at you and be shouted at and have really overt experiences of discrimination. On the other hand, we are surrounded by these very negative messages, so it's more likely that people internalise. I've only got a couple of minutes. So pretty much the relationships were what you would expect. Very strong negative relationships with self-esteem, appearance evaluation. React is the restriction of activity scale. And I looked at avoiding eating in public, which, you know, if you think how that impacts on people's lives, and avoidance of exercising in public. And the one thing I'd like to draw your attention to is the size of those coefficients. Internalized weight stigma is much more strongly correlated than even experience stigma. And these were the eating outcomes. So I used the Dutch Eating Behaviour Questionnaire. Again, all in the direction you'd expect. Experienced and internalised stigma increase disordered type eating behaviours. And again, the effect sizes are higher for internalised stigma. So it seems to be the internalised stigma that's binge eating over the previous 3 and 6 months. And that's the eating disorders diagnostic scale. So internalised weight stigma, 0.658 as a correlation coefficient. That's after controlling for BMI and dieting. So it's the internalised weight stigma that seems to be driving a lot of this disordered eating. I'll skip that. It's all pretty much what you would expect, basically. You can download these slides if you want them. So I also looked at mediation effects. And what I found was that there was a direct effect of experience stigma on all the outcomes. But once you controlled for internalized stigma, a lot of those became non-significant. So in other words, a lot of the effect, the negative effects of being stigmatized, are being mediated via internalized weight stigma. So someone says something bad to you, you believe it, you feel bad about yourself, and that's what's driving these behaviors. So to summarise, okay, should we be doing something about internalised weight stigma? You mentioned size acceptance. On the one hand, really, we should be doing something about the stigmatising environment rather than trying to, you know, get the victim of this kind of thing to change themselves. But it does seem to be protective for a lot of psychological and behavioural outcomes. Obviously, liking yourself is no protection against not being hired or having things thrown at you. But there do seem to be health and wellbeing benefits. So what I'm hoping to do is to develop a size acceptance intervention online based on Fatosphere content. For those of you that don't know it, that's the social media related to fat acceptance online. The way that people would normally use blogs. So this is something that's brief, self-delivered, doesn't require 6 months of intervention with a psychologist, a dietitian, and what have you. And hopefully that will reduce internalization from there, improve health and well-being. The Weight Stigma Conference, quick plug, soon to be in its third year. If you're interested in this kind of thing, you can go to stigmaconference.com. And sign up for updates. You also get a nice trip out of it because it's not in the States. That's my contact details if you want to contact me. And finally, I would just like to thank my supervisor, Dr. Suzanne Higgs, my co-panelists, Natalie, Andrea, Janelle, and of course our chair, Catherine Womack. Thank you very much.